Okay, so we're up to part three of employment termination disputes. This is going to be the last installment in the series. So just to review, we've discussed some of the common theme Torah courses when you have a termination of an employee. What are some of the claims that are raised in Beis Din? And we mentioned three thus far. We mentioned one common claim is that there was no right to fire the employee. Let's say that an employer decides that at the expiration of a contract term, the employer is not going to renew the contract. So according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, there's an assumption when you hire an employee that as long as the job needs to continue to be performed, that the employee is going to be hired forever, unless there was a breach that the employee committed in terms of job performance, that they did some act of malfeasance or they proved that they were very negligent in terms of their performance of the job duties. But if they're doing the work, they're doing the job, even if the employer finds that there is somebody else that they would prefer, but the employee didn't do anything wrong, so then you're stuck with the employee for life. And we said that the Chazon Ish had a different point of view. The Chazon Ish said that's only when the minhag is that you can only terminate somebody for cause. But otherwise, the assumption is that when there's a completion of a job term, you don't have to rehire the same employee forever. You could hire somebody else at the end of the job term. So that was claim number one. And then claim number two that sometimes comes up is the claim that there wasn't sufficient notice that was given. And we quoted the Chazon Ish that said that just like a tenant has to give a landlord sufficient notice that he or she is not renewing the lease term, and a landlord has to give sufficient notice to a tenant that the landlord's not planning to renew the lease term, and give sufficient time so that the person can find a different tenant or can find a different landlord. And if they didn't give sufficient notice, so then they're on the hook for the next year. So the same is true with respect to an employment situation, that there has to be sufficient notice that an employer gives to an employee so that they can find a different job. So that we said it's the second type of claim that is made. Yes?
You're talking about landlord tenant. Ask me for the whole year as opposed to month to month?
Whatever is the season. Whatever is the season. If there's a season in which your person wouldn't be able to find another apartment, say, in the area, because everybody rents out at a particular time of the year, so then there has to be sufficient notice, which is given until the person would be able to, you know, find a different place to live. And then we say that there's a third claim that comes up, which is the claim that perseverates, that the employee says that I work for you for such and such years, and there is an obligation of Hanukkah. We discussed that. Is there a halakhic obligation, even if it wasn't stipulated in the contract, that there has to be a payment of severance? So you could have, on many different levels, you can have a claim. A person gets fired. They could say, you had no right to fire me in the first place, and I have to be reinstated. And they can say, you didn't give me, even if you had a right to fire me, you didn't give me sufficient notice, and therefore I should be allowed to get the payment for the following year because I couldn't get a different job, or get at least paid as a kohel batel, as a laborer who has nothing to do. Maybe they'll only get 50% of their salary, but we discussed that, how much would they get? And then they can also say, and even if there was sufficient notice, and even if there was termination for cause, I still want severance. I want the ability, I want the payment for all the years that I worked, whatever should be a proper severance. And we discussed that there was somebody who wrote a sefer called Kodesh Lashana, in which the argument and the claim was that a person who works at least in a clay Kodesh position is entitled to a month's salary for every single year that they work, because that's the minhag that was established, as we all know, by Rav Moshe Feinstein, except that none of us know that because he never published it, but we all know that because apparently he whispered it into somebody's ear, and therefore it became known that this was a shita, so somebody published a book on that subject. So we discussed all of that. So again, the one thing, though, that we can, that everybody agrees upon is that during the middle of a job term, if somebody was hired, for example, for 1 year, they were hired for 6 months, they was hired for 5 years, so during that job term itself, for which a person was hired, they're only allowed to be terminated for cause. So a major type of dispute that arises in Beis Din is when it has been established that a person could only be terminated for a cause, was there sufficient cause? Now you could say, well, maybe there's such a thing as a person who's never in the middle of a job term, because you can have what's known as an employee at will. An employee at will, one of the advantages of having an employee at will is that there's never a term. and they can be terminated at any point in time for no reason whatsoever. So that's the question, is there such a concept in halakha as an employee at will? If Moshe Feinstein would probably take some exception to that. He would say that if you hired somebody without a fixed term, so then the understanding is that it's not at will, it's forever. But let's say you stipulated explicitly that you can fire the person for no reason whatsoever. So then Rav Moshe would say it's not such a nice thing to do, but it would presumably be binding, I guess, if you entered into that type of an understanding, unless Rav Moshe would say it was in the context of a clay kodesh, or it was the context of a communal Jewish institution appointment, because Rav Moshe writes in the tshuva that the heads or the boards of Jewish institutions are bidden to only follow Jewish law. They're appointed like the Zayin Tzuvei Ya'ir, like the people who are the official council people for the Jewish community to administer all affairs of the Jewish community according to principles of Jewish law. So they have no right to hire somebody in a fashion which would be in contravention to default Jewish law principles. The default Jewish law principle, according to Rav Moshe, would be that a person is hired for as long as they're capable of doing the job. Others would say no. If you explicitly made an agreement to hire somebody as an employee at will, then you could actually get rid of them for no reason whatsoever. However, generally speaking, there'll be a contract for a certain number of years, and sometimes the contract will stipulate under what grounds a person can be terminated. And there will be a clause that says grounds for termination. Whatever is a contract is a contract. But even if there is no contract, the halakha does recognize that there's such a thing as being allowed under any circumstances to terminate somebody for cause. So the big question is, what constitutes a termination for cause? So this is so I brought today some of the different considerations that are mentioned in the postgame that the Batei Din have to take into account in terms of what's considered to be termination for cause. So if Moshe Feinstein addresses this issue in Choshen Mishpah Chelek Aleph Siman Ayin, hey, this is his long tshuva, which he says that you're never really allowed to fire somebody in a default situation, unless, even if a contract comes to an end, or if there was no set contract term, then it's assumed the person's hired forever, unless there is some type of a cause. You have somebody who is working as a kitchen worker, where it is understood, he says, that you can't get rid of a worker without a valid reason. So he said, according to my understanding, you hired somebody, it's forever unless they mess up. And therefore, he says that, generally speaking, a worker who is terminated is entitled to a ruling by the Beis Din of specific performance. It can actually be a specific performance requirement that the employer is obligated to rehire the employee. Actually, obligated to place them back in the same job where they were previously. And if they didn't, they might have to just pay them a salary forever, or as a po'al batel forever, for not reinstating them as they're supposed to do. Barakashi Yavaru Biyadiya Barua, he says, the way in which there can be a justification is if you find cause. So what was the cause in this case? Shuba Machlokis. Says if the person is a ba machlokis, the person is just a rabble rouser, the person is a very abrasive personality, that they're always getting into fights, they're always rubbing people the wrong way. If somebody's always rubbing people the wrong way at work, they're ba machlokis, so then that would be grounds for terminating the individual. The anhaga sham yukul asok, so if the person is mafrias havoda anhaga sham, because they're such a difficult, contentious personality, they're always causing dissent and disruption at work. Yukul salko, that's considered to be grounds for termination, even though you could say the person didn't objectively mess up at work. They didn't show up late for work. They didn't fail to complete their quota in terms of whatever job that they were supposed to complete, they were supposed to perform. But nonetheless, they're just a contentious personality. Izeo taina chashuva, that's considered to be a sufficient cause. But, says Rav Moshe, one very important qualification for this, which is that the employer is not allowed to just show up in Beis Din and say, oh, I had a right to fire him or her because they were a contentious personality. They have to prove it. That here we don't say that because the one who owns the company, so to speak, is the employer, therefore they're considered to be the muhsab, then therefore the proof, the burden of proof rests upon the employee to show that the employer had no right to terminate them. Say, no, the muhsab here is considered to be the employee, even though it's not their business, they don't own the business, but halakhically speaking, since there is this very strong presumption that they have the right to be there forever unless proven otherwise, therefore a very important halakhic principle is that the burden of proof goes on to the employer. The employer is the one who has to demonstrate with absolute proof that the employee has this deficiency, whatever it happens to be, that they're a machlok, that they are considered to be the baal hamachlokus in this case. So, kashelo yibur, and if the employer is not able to demonstrate this, ein ne'emanim etaynes bari du nechshem muksok baleim, because the employee is considered the muksok baleim l'habiraya, and the employers have to bring the proof. Can the mashmim yushami shebesi, as is indicated by the Talmud Yushami. What does the Talmud Yushami say? That's source number two. The Talmud Yushami really just brings the Mishnah that we have in our Gemara in Bava Metzia. Sometimes there are slight variations in the language of the Mishnah as printed in the Talmud Yushami as printed in the Talmud Bavli. This is what Rav Shechter's father got a doctorate in. Rav Shechter, Herschel Shechter's father, Rav Melech Shechter, was the Rosh Yeshiva YU for many years. He had a doctorate from Dropsy University. What did he get his doctorate in? He got his doctorate in comparing the variant texts between the Talmud Bavli and the Talmud Yerushalmi. So sometimes there's slight variations, and it sometimes has different connotations and meaning as well. This is in the day when you got smicha, you would also get some type of a scholarly degree. You had many rabbis who had doctorates. You still have some rabbis who have doctorates, but not as many. I remember when I was a student at YU, it was much more common that the older, more established rabbanim all had doctorates in Jewish philosophy, Jewish history, this, that, the other thing. So Melech Shechter got his doctorate in this, okay? So what Yushami says, Asokas Apollon, if you hire workers, Bramlehem, Lahashkim, and Laharib, Malcolm Shinaga, and you told them, I want you to start working from the break of dawn, and I want you to continue working until it's nightfall. Malcolm Shinaga, Shulashkim, Laharib. If the normal hours are 9 to 5, right? Everybody remember there was like a movie, 9 to 5 or something, a song, 9 to 5, something like that, that this is understood, that this is very sacred in the American working tradition, that you work 9 to 5, not a minute earlier, not a minute later, right? Especially if you're kind of on the lower tier and you're not getting any special benefits or high salaries, so you're entitled to your rights. You get your 1 hour lunch break, you will start at 9, you finish at 5. It doesn't matter if the employer says, I want you to start working earlier and later. No, enu yachol lekufan, you cannot, even though you're the employer, and you figure the employer is the one in charge, nothing doing. Malcolm Shinna, similarly, Malcolm Shinna gulaz and yazin, if you're supposed to provide lunch, you can't stipulate, you're not going to provide lunch. The sapik masika yisapik akol kamina kamedina, once that you've hired them and you didn't stipulate otherwise from the get-go, so then it's understood that they're working subject to the normal terms of work, and even though you're the employer, the burden is on you to establish that there was a different type of arrangement. So look in the Gemara, this is the bolded portion. That the minig, even if the halacha would have said that worker is supposed to work from early morning till late night, if there's a minig otherwise, the minig in favor of the employee always trumps. Generally speaking, if you're an employee and you want to exact something from an employer, that I don't have something and I want to exact money from you, I want to exact a benefit from you, so I have to prove that I'm entitled to that benefit. So the exception to that rule, says the Yushami, so Moshe Feinstein cites, is an employment situation. Employment situation, if there's a general presumption that an employee is supposed to be at work, is supposed to be hired until such time as they commit malfeasance, until such time as they mess up, so then the burden is on the employer. The employee does not have to prove that they have a right to receive wages, a right to continue to be hired. The burden is on the employer to prove that the employee messed up. So therefore, the employer wants to prove that the employee is a baal machlokes. So then it's necessary that the employer will be the one who will bring that proof. Now, Rav Moshe also has this in the context of Torah teachers, where he has a long tshuva in which he says if somebody starts as a Torah teacher in an institution, it's understood that they're intended to be rehired and retained for as long as they're capable of teaching. So Rav Moshe says that what does it mean to be a capable teacher? Many of the tshuvos that deal with the right to terminate deal with Torah teachers. And then one of the reasons for this is that this was a very common profession. I know that this is what pretty much three out of four of my great-grandfathers, this is what they did. They were malachim. This was a kind of like, that was the default profession as well. That's what people did for a living. They were malamdim. And also, you figure that people are malamdim are more likely to care about what the halacha is going to say as well, though we certainly would hope that everybody would. But generally speaking, when the Shulchan Aruch talks about standards of terminating employees, there's a lot of focus which is placed upon malamdim. So Rav Moshe also has this truth about malamdim. And he says, if you have a malamid, it's assumed that they're going to still be qualified and competent to do their job until such time, you know, he says sometimes people work for a long time and they start getting lazy and they start slacking off, they start burning out. And you get the impression from Rav Moshe that you would be allowed to fire somebody or not rehire somebody on the basis of the fact that they're slacking off even as a malamid, that they're no longer as effective at connecting to the Talmidim, at teaching the Talmidim, they're just not doing a good and competent job. But he says that the longer in which somebody is constantly rehired, the greater and stronger the presumption becomes that they are capable of doing their job, and therefore the greater the burden of proof becomes on the institution to prove that this long standing a teacher who has been there for so many years has begun to slack off, is no longer capable of doing their job. So you can fire somebody for that reason, but the burden of proof grows heavier and heavier every single year that the person continues to stay in that position. Yes.
But didn't we say that in the case of a Malamed, if you find another Malamed who's better than this one, that you could fire this one?
So there's a very important contradiction when it comes to Malamdim, which is discussed by the Minchas Yitzchak, discusses this, Chelek Dalet Shemenayin Hay, is discussed by others as well. There's a complete contradiction in the halacha when it comes to Malamdin. There's a Gemara in Baba Basra which says that if you find somebody who's better, which means that the teacher did not commit any malfeasance whatsoever, you just found somebody who is better, then you're allowed to just hire the person who's better, and you no longer have to maintain the Malamdin who was originally hired. You just fire them because you found somebody who's better. It's the most incredible thing. And yet at the same time, there's a Tshuva Sarash. The Rosh has a Tshuva, Rabbeinu Asher, has a tshuva in Klal Kuf Dalid Simen Dalid, in which the Rosh says that when you hire a Malamed, you're absolutely not allowed within the term of their employment, he does specify the term of their employment, you're absolutely not allowed under any circumstances whatsoever to fire that Malamed if they didn't do anything wrong, even if you find somebody who's better. So many of the later Achronim say, what's going on over here? Which is it? And this tshuva of the Rosh is quoted by the Meforshim LaHalacha, and the Gemara that says that you can fire the Malamid if you find somebody better is also quoted LaHalacha, not in Chosh Mishpat, that deals with the laws of what you're allowed or not allowed to do with workers, but in Yoredeya, which deals with the laws of Talmud Torah and Malamdim, of how you're supposed to, with the laws of how you're supposed to teach Torah properly, so it appears over there. So there are different answers that are given. There's one answer with one approach, which is the approach of the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan says that I'm not paying attention to the Tshuva Sarash, I'm paying attention to the Gemara. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, the Gemara says, Malamdim are different from everybody else because of the primacy and the paramount value of teaching Torah properly. We need to have Kina Sofim Ta B'Chokma. A Rebbe should never feel secure in his job. We don't want Rebbeim to feel secure. If you're a lawyer, doctor, you can feel secure. It's fine. But if you're a Rebbe, we want you to be in a state of perpetual insecurity. Why is that? Because we want you to constantly be at your best and to worry about losing your job any moment because somebody else might be better than you, because it's so important that you be the best possible Rebbe that you can be. So the Aruch HaShulchan says that this is the Ashita, this is the approach that we would follow the Halacha. Okay? However, the Aruch HaShulchan is not accepted, generally speaking, the Halacha. So those who don't accept the Aruch HaShulchan have to reconcile this apparent contradiction. contradiction. It's the apparent contradiction between these two different sources. So what do we do? How do we reconcile? So the Minchas Yitzchak says the reconciliation is very simple. When is it that we say that you can hire somebody else? That's when you originally hired this Rebbe, not for a long specified term, but just you're doing it on a day-to-day basis. You're hiring a Rebbe almost as an at-will employee, and you made it clear that he's serving as an at-will employee. However, if you hire for a particular term, so then you certainly are not allowed to fire the Rebbe because you found somebody better within that term. Another approach at which the Minchas Yitzchak mentions is that there was a minhag that you would have a tryout period for a Rebbe. That the Rebbe knew that during that tryout period, if you found somebody else who was better, then you wouldn't have to continue with the Rebbe. You could hire the person who is better, but it's only during the tryout period. But once you've actually stipulated that you are hiring this person and you've entered into terms of employment, or the employment has actually begun, so at that point you're no longer allowed to fire the Rebbe if you find somebody else better. And the third approach, which I saw in the Sefer Mishpat HaPoalim, that I mentioned to you, the Sefer Mishpat HaPoalim, that was written by Rabbi Yosef Rosner, who did this wonderful job. It's like sort of a modern day perspective towards employment situations from an Israeli law and halacha vantage point, where he took a look at the various employment statutes in Eretz Yisrael and also the halakhas and tried to reconcile them all, but not in a Mishpat Divri kind of way. For those of you who know Mishpat Divri, those who are believe in the Israeli Supreme Court system and feel that you can integrate halakha and secular law in Israel, he wasn't really a Mishpat Divri personality. He was a more Haredi oriented personality, but still with a respect for Dina D'Malchus. It's a very interesting sefer, really a very worthwhile Sefer, and I think I mentioned maybe once before that before he got around to publishing the Sefer, he unfortunately was nifter all of a sudden. So the Sefer actually has on the title page, it's a Bible of Yosef Rosner Zal, the quote of Levacha. But it's a wonderful, wonderful Sefer. So in that Sefer by Rabbi Rosner, so he talks about this as well. And he says that maybe the reconciliation is that you could, if you wanted to, fire the Rebbe to hire somebody who is better because you think that it's going to be good for the Talmidim and you're looking out for the Talmidim, you could do it. That's a Yoredeya law because you're looking out for making sure you have the best possible Talmud Torah. But from a Choshen Mishpat perspective, you had no monetary right to do it, and therefore you're going to have to pay him his full salary. So yes, you can get rid of him in the sense that we're not going to require specific performance, but you still have a liability to pay the full amount of the salary because of the fact that this is not considered to be sufficient cause from a pure monetary law perspective. So that I thought is also, and he liked that answer very much. I think that it's actually a very sound approach because that would explain why this dispensation to hire somebody else who's better only appears in Yoredeya and doesn't appear in Choshen Mishpat. Yes.
First of all, that's Mishpat HaPoalim, you said is the name of it?
Mishpat HaPoalim is the name of the Sefer. Very, very fine Sefer.
Secondly, when it comes to Rav Moshe's point of view, however, Rav Moshe says there is not necessarily any term of employment.
Right, Rav Moshe said, unless, of course, you do specify a term of employment.
Right.
If you specify a term of employment, Rav Moshe would go along with that. He just says that if you're a communal institution, then it could be that it's null and void because it's not inconsistent with Torah values and standards. But if you're not a communal institution, you're just a factory, and you have a specific term of employment, so then he might say that from an ethical perspective, it's not proper not to renew. But if you make it clear from the get-go that you reserve the right not to renew, it's okay. Otherwise, he says that sometimes it's not clear, that if you have a term of employment, sometimes it's just understood that you're going to automatically renew that term of employment unless the person did something wrong. So you'd have to write in the contract, I have the right to not renew the contract for any reason whatsoever. You would have to actually write that in the contract. Okay, now, if you take a look at Source 3, so Rav Moshe Sternbach goes a step further. He says, let's say the person's not a Baal Machlokas, but it's reached the point in which the employer and the employee, they just don't get along with each other. They push it, don't get along with each other. The employee doesn't do anything wrong in the sense of disrupting the workplace, but between the employer and the employee, there's a lot of tension, that there is a bad feeling. There's a growing animosity between the two of them. It could be that this person is so much not a Baal Machlokas, that's what's causing the animosity. Maybe the employer is a little bit rough on the edges, and this guy who's the employee is the sweetest person in the world, and that's what's causing the tension. Whatever it is, the reason, it's what we call irreconcilable differences. You know that it used to be that in most states, when people would want to get divorced, for example, you couldn't get divorced without cause. Now that's pretty much changed throughout the United States. It's interesting, it was always different from the perspective of halakha. Halakha always allowed two people who don't want to stay married to each other to get divorced without any cause. It was always much more progressive than the secular law system. But in America, at least, it was based on, I suppose, a Catholic tradition. There was a very strong feeling that a divorce should not be allowed unless there was cause. There was cruel and inhuman treatment, for example. Or there was adultery, or there was some, you know, type of thing that was considered to be a breach in the marriage itself. So the easiest grounds that used to exist when there was a requirement that divorce be for cause was what we call irreconcilable differences. So is irreconcilable differences enough of a breach to allow for an employer to say, this is sufficient cause, I'm going to terminate the contract, even though it's in the middle of the term? So says Moshe Sternbach, yes. He says, he's talking about a case where there's an employment dispute, and he says, and he says that the people who are being brought to Beis Din want to be able to fire the claimant. We're dealing with a Jewish employee, and we don't want to take away panasa from anybody. That's always hovering in the background, that we have to care about a person's panasa, so we can't fire somebody so easily. But he says, according to the manager of the organization, so the manager testified that there are irreconcilable differences, that there are tensions between the manager and the employee. Therefore, he's just not able to manage him anymore. He's just not able to manage the employee anymore. There is a gupa sibul apotrot. He says this is sufficient grounds for termination. Just not being able to have a comfortable relationship. So you could say, wow, that's going to be pretty easy. Just like whenever people wanted to divorce without finding other grounds. You can always argue irreconcilable differences that we've been separated. We just that I don't want to be in the same house as this person for a certain period of time. I don't want to be in the house as this employee. Well, that's an easy thing to assert and not so difficult to prove because it's just a question of your own emotional feelings towards that person. And so he says that would be grounds for termination. He does qualify it. He says that sometimes you have grounds for termination for cause, and we say that if you can terminate for cause because the person was really reckless or the person really committed some type of egregious breach of the employment contract, then you don't even have to shower appreciation upon them when you get rid of them by giving them a severance package. So if there was a general requirement to provide a Chodesh Lashon or some other severance package, you could say, I'm not going to provide severance. So he says, if it's based on cooling and human treatment, so maybe then you don't have to provide severance. But if you're firing somebody based on irreconcilable differences, so then he says, Achen ein zu sipa maspekes, this is not considered to be sufficient grounds not to provide somebody with severance. You would still have to provide severance, but you remember that we saw this opinion among some of the Israeli poskim who took the position, I think Shuvas Ben Hagas amongst them, that the more in which there is the practice to provide severance, and the more flexible is your ability to terminate somebody. But he says even if it's in the middle of the contract, where generally speaking you would require termination for cause, this could be considered to be sufficient cause. So says Rav Rosner says that he doesn't think that this works from the perspective of if the irreconcilable feelings emerge from the manager. He says that it has to be that there's some sort of conduct, even if the person is not a Baal Machlokas, there's some sort of conduct that is being committed by the employee that is adding to the tension. It can't just be that the manager feels tension because they just don't like the person, but the person's not at fault at all. I don't like the person because they're so good. They make me feel bad about myself. So that's not considered to be good. And so he gives an example in Hilchos Skiras Batim. This is in Siman Shin Yud Beis. So it talks about, is a landlord allowed to terminate a lease with a tenant because they no longer get along with each other? So the Rama says that yes, if you have two things at play. Number one, that it was explicitly stipulated by the landlord that the landlord is only leasing to the tenant because he's his friend. He says, I'm leasing to you because you're my friend. So then it's understood that if the tenant is no longer going to be the friend, but the tenant's going to become an enemy, is going to become somebody who doesn't get along with him, so then the landlord would be able to terminate the lease. That's no one condition. The second condition is that the reason why the tensions evolve, this is what the Taz says, the Taz over there says, and it also has to be that the reason why they're no longer friends is because of various breaches that were committed in the relationship by the tenant. And only if you have those two different conditions. So says Rabbi Reisner that it could be that the notion of getting along doesn't have to be explicitly stipulated in a work environment. Landlord-tenant situation, you're not on top of each other. Presumably the landlord lives in one place, the tenant lives in another place, so it's not generally understood that you have to be friendly with each other in order for the lease to remain valid. That has to be explicitly stipulated. But in a work environment, there's more of an understanding that if there isn't going to be a meeting of the minds, there isn't going to be a harmonious relationship, that really could impact on the employment situation. So therefore, that doesn't have to be stated. But the condition of the ties, that the ties stipulates with respect to landlord-tenant relationships, the condition that there's only a dispensation to terminate based on there being disharmony when the cause of the disharmony comes from the tenant, here the same thing would be true, that the cause of the disharmony would have to come from the employee. And if it cannot be demonstrated that it comes from the employee, so then this particular dispensation of the Tshuvas Van Hagos would not be applicable. Now, the Tshuvas Van Hagos himself didn't say that it has to be the fault of the employee, but this is the assumption that Rabbi Reisner has, and he gives an example from the Shailos Tshuvas Beis Shlomo. So the Shailos Tshuvas Beis Shlomo talks about a rav who hired an assistant rabbi, and it became very clear shortly into the employment of the assistant rabbi that the major goal and objective and pursuit of the assistant rabbi in his life was to take over the job of being the rabbi, to make himself look better and to make the regular rabbi look bad so that the job would eventually go to him. And all about Eve's type of situation. So if anybody who remembers that particular book or whatever it was, maybe it's a short story. So, okay, it's a movie. Okay, so so in that particular context, he says that it's understood that the most egregious type of disharmony when you hire somebody is when the employee is trying to take over the job of the employer. So if you have that type of situation when the employee is trying to take over the job of the employer, so then for sure it would be grounds for terminating the employment relationship. So now let's go on to source number four. So here we have the discussion that I mentioned from the Minchas Yitzchak. The Minchas Yitzchak discusses, he starts off discussing this opinion of the Aruch HaShulchan, who says that you can fire somebody who's a Melamed, for example, if you found somebody who's better than Melamed, and he repudiates that view. He says that we don't hold like the Aruch HaShulchan, and he gives the various distinctions that we mentioned earlier. Some of the distinctions we mentioned, how we can reconcile the Gemara that the Aruch HaShulchan bases himself upon in the Tshuva Sarash, it says exactly the opposite. So then go to the second paragraph over here. He says that V'chein Mukach Medivrei HaRashba. He says that the fact that we don't hold like the Aruch HaShulchan is also evident in the Tshuva Sarashba, who talks about the following situation. Ruvain Shesachah Malamin Levno Leben Chaveru. Ruvain hires a Rebbe for himself and also for one other person, his friend, who's also going to be responsible for paying the Rebbe. And his friend said, okay, I'll pay half of the salary of the Rebbe. And then his friend decides in the middle of the employment contract of the Rebbe to hire a different Rebbe, and he doesn't want to pay the first Rebbe anymore. Says the Rashba, nothing doing. He has to still pay the first Rebbe. Mashitan Chaveru. So what was the claim of the Chaver? Shosakul Shana Menashe asked him Lakta Karoi, that he only hired him on condition that he do his job in the most optimal possible fashion. Asim Lakta Karoi means I only hired this person on the basis of the assumption that this person would do the best possible job that could be done. Not that the person did anything wrong. So he's saying the person just didn't do it. Karoi, that is the highest standard as I was looking for, and I found somebody else who could do a higher standard, so that's why I want to get rid of them. That doesn't work, he says. And therefore, since the person admits that he was obligated to pay, he's obligated to pay unless he could take a shvua that there was an explicit stipulation that was made at the time of hiring that he was only agreeing to pay this Rebbe if this Rebbe would do the most optimal possible job that any Rebbe could possibly do. So Rei Mashmami says the Minchas Yitzchak the Dafka in Hisna Menashe Yaseh Malachto Karoi. That the only time you have the right to get rid of somebody in the middle because you find somebody better is if you say to the person, I'm hiring you, kind of like at will, with the understanding that even if you don't commit a breach, if I find somebody who I think can do the job better, then I can get rid of you at any time. But if there was no such condition along those lines, then you cannot, though you find somebody who's better, who does this optimal, fantastic, unbelievably wonderful job that you're looking for, you're not allowed to get rid of the person. So then he says, interestingly enough, if you cut to the last paragraph from the Minchas Yitzchak on page 2 over here, he says, Amna Mechozeh, he says that in this particular case, he was talking about somebody who had fired a Malamed, a Rebbe, and the Rebbe was complaining that it wasn't right. So he says that this individual who's writing the Minchas Yitzchak is standing up for the Malamed, and he says that, so here for sure, there was no right to get rid of the Malamed, because there's no claim that he was negligent in his teaching, etc. And the only thing that was wrong, the only reason why the Menayo got rid of the Rebbe in the middle was because, that the Menayo, the dean of the yeshiva, had a different educational philosophy than the Moreh, had a different way in which he believed that the students should be taught. So then, for sure, that's not grounds for firing somebody, right? Just doesn't like the way in which this Rebbe is teaching. So Ladati says to Minchas Yitzchak, that's a condition that everybody understands, even if it's not stipulated. If you're a dean of a school and you hire a Rebbe, even if it's not stipulated, everybody knows that what is paramount in terms of the orderly running of any yeshiva of any school is that all the Rebbeim are following the same educational philosophy of the dean, of the person who's the manal in charge of the school. You cannot run a school where you have certain Rebbeim who say, I refuse to go along with the standards, the protocols, the curricula that have been established by the manal. If they're not following the curricula and the protocols and the educational philosophy of the manal, so that makes them into a renegade, and that is considered to be one of the worst forms of negligence that can be performed by a Rebbe. And that, he says, doesn't even have to be explicitly stipulated. So he says, L'dayti takanoso zo kalkoloso, that he thinks he didn't do anything wrong. He's just going against the philosophy and the curriculum and the style of the menayo that he's requiring of his teachers, and this person is not going along with what are the requirements that are stipulated in terms of how to teach by the menayo. So he says, Adaraba Garakoko Bazet. The Rebbe thinks that this makes his case stronger, this makes his case much weaker. This is a Havik Modisa Barashba Sham. This is a case where the Rashba said it would be different if it would be stipulated. Here it's considered like it's stipulated. But Taina she asked him, Alok the Karoi, this is considered like you did make that stipulation. That the one who's running the school had the right to fire the Rebbe. I was the manal of a yeshiva for 5 years. I like this tshuva. If you're a Rebbe, you're going into the school. You're going to the school adaita de menahel. You're going in on condition. You're going to follow what the menahel says. Unless binyanei chinuch, even if it wasn't explicitly stipulated, it's understood that this is what was intended. Imlo, he adds an important caveat. Imlo sheyesh lo menahel shita shlo kal lacha. Unless the menahel had some sort of a shita that was contrary to halacha, like the menahel said, I believe that we should train women rabbis, or something like that. Some sort of a shita that is completely negative to halacha. But if it's just that the Manah says, look, I run a religious Zionist institution, and I want you to teach about Yom HaAtzmaut, so then you have to teach about Yom HaAtzmaut, because that's a legitimate sheet. It's not necessarily one that's held by everybody. Or it could be the reverse. I run a Haredi institution, and we don't encourage people to go to college, and the Rebbe spends all his time telling people to go to college. It's a legitimate view to have a Haredi yeshiva where you say, I don't believe in following that path. As long as it is the style of the school is within the framework of a legitimate viewpoint. If one goes to work in that school, then they have to follow that legitimate viewpoint, as long as they're not spouting something which is absolutely neged lahalacha. So I'll jump a little bit, okay?
Regardless of when the
I would think that as long as the Menahel is a legitimately hired Menahel and is following some sort of legitimate shita, even if the Rebbe, say, has a different approach in his own life in terms of his own educational philosophy of how he would teach or the things that he would teach, nonetheless, he has to, within the context of teaching in that school, go along with whatever is now the philosophy, ideology, approach that is being promoted by the Menahel at that point in time, unless it happens to be neged lahalacha. So I think I mentioned once that there was a Beis Din of America case where they had issued a ruling, and then the ruling got overturned by civil court. And I said I was a little worried about this because the Beis Din of America, I'm still a Chabad Beis Din, I was the Menahel there for a number of years, had a perfect record and never had a decision overturned by civil court. So I, just for your own edification, I attached an article that was written in January 2009 about how the decision of the Beis Din was overturned by a New York State Supreme Court that was called an irrational decision. And I also attached an article afterwards from February 23rd, 2010, same newspaper, same author, about how an appellate court decided the decision in favor of the Rebbe fired by Yeshiva is not irrational, and the original decision was reinstated and was sustained, so therefore the Beis Din of America's perfect record was reinstated as well, and there was no case, therefore, that was ultimately overturned by a court of a decision of the Beis Din of America. If you look in the original article gives you the name of the Rebbe. I felt a little bit uncomfortable reproducing the name of the Rebbe, so I just saved the first initial of his second last name. The school, I don't think, is quite as big a deal that to have the name of the school, because, you know, schools fire teachers and these things happen. So that's the one thing that I redacted in terms of my preparation of the materials. But what was interesting about this case was that what was the reason why the school felt that it could terminate the Rebbe. So we don't have the Beis Din decision here. That's a confidential decision. But we have a reporting of the case by the newspaper. It says the case, take a look on page 3. The case concerns a Rebbe named Nachum B. He began teaching at Hefter, the school, in 1991 and was let go at the end of the 2005 academic year due to differences in Hashkafa, religious outlook, with the school. That the school felt, at least according to the way that this is being reported, the school felt that he had a different religious outlook and therefore was not comfortable hiring him. And the Beis Din came to the decision that the firing of this Rebbe was not justified under the circumstances. Number one, they determined that he had effectively, that he had tenure. And number two, that they were obligated to reinstate him at a certain salary, which the judge felt was an exorbitant salary, so that's why the judge said that it was irrational. And number three, that the differences in Hashkafa by themselves are not grounds to terminate the Rebbe, as long as, and I'm, you know, reading more into the text that exists here, but I presumably the idea is, as long as the Rebbe in the classroom is teaching in the fashion that would be required according to the educational philosophy of the school. In other words, what you cannot derive from this tshuva that we just read of the Minchas Yitzchak is that there would be the right to terminate somebody because of their own personal ideology if there are a range of legitimate philosophical perspectives in Orthodox Judaism and that person happens to have a different one than that of the school, as long as he's teaching according to what the school requires, the fact that this person in his own private life might harbor a different perspective is not considered to be sufficient grounds for terminating that person.
So why did they
double the salary?
So if you take a look at the last article, you'll see that it explains, it even quotes some of the people who knew a little bit about the case, and they said that really that salary was not doubled, it was that was consistent with the salary that he had been making for some time. There were various extraneous factors as to why the salary went down over the years, but really, generally speaking, he was making this amount of money. He was even making more than the amount of money that they required to be paid in the end. So the final appellate judge looked at this decision and said, you may not like this decision, but you certainly can't say that the decision is irrational. So it's kind of just an interesting real-life example of how a Bezdin had to wrestle with some of these issues. Yes?
So with the last part of what you said, if a Haredi school has a teacher who has a television at home, and they don't go for the television, or if the Haredi school has a teacher who sends his kids to a mixed summer camp,
right,
and they don't go for this mixed summer camp, that would not be
so
grounds.
So that might not be grounds, unless at the time in which the Rebbe is hired, it's stipulated explicitly in the contract that you understand that we require, in order for you to serve as the role model that we want and so forth, if the school goes so far as to say that in order for you to remain employed by us, then you can't have a television in your home and you can't have these other things. If it's stipulated up front and the person takes the job subject to that understanding, then I think it's a different story. But I think that the more extraneous it is to the duties which are in the classroom and the things which are sort of obvious and evident, you know, it's one thing to say that you're going to fire somebody because they're not a role model and that they're not living an Orthodox Jewish life. So that's, I think, more understandable. If they're living an Orthodox Jewish life, but it's just a different strand of Orthodoxy, a slightly different hashkafic perspective, and you want to be able to fire somebody on that basis, even though they're teaching according to the hashkafa of the school, then I think it would have to be much more explicitly contracted for in order not to give rise to a course of action in front of a Bezdin. I think that's what we can derive from the accumulation of the sources. Now, what about if you just have somebody that was there for a long time, but they're getting really old? Can you say that you can fire somebody based on their being really old? What we would call age discrimination. Do we allow for age discrimination according to halacha? So the Rashba in Source 5 over here points out that you'll find that in when it comes to appointing people to the Sanhedrin, one of the requirements in appointing for the Sanhedrin, we're going to have to convict a person for capital crimes, is that we don't appoint somebody who's a zaken, somebody who's already very old, already in the 70s and so forth. Why is that? Because we're afraid that they won't have sufficient compassion. They've already forgotten what it's like to raise small children and to have to deal with people who like get on your nerves. So as a result, they should not sit in the Sanhedrin. They might be cranky. It might be like the 12 angry men kind of phenomenon. You don't want somebody who's all that cranky to be serving in this capacity. So if he's asked the question, he says, is that only true in terms of not appointing the person to begin with? Or let's say they were appointed, do we say, like Thurgood Marshall used to say, they'll have to carry, I'm not going to leave until they carry me out of here in a black box or something like that. And in the end, he did leave beforehand, but not so much beforehand. So do we say as well that in this context, that if the person was already appointed, we don't get rid of them if they reach that old age? Or do we say, no, it doesn't make a difference? The Meiri, it so happens, says that we don't get rid of the person if he was appointed to the Sanhedrin at the age of 20 and now he turns 70, but we're looking to appoint someone to begin with, so there is a cutoff point that he can't begin to serve at that age. But so Rashba doesn't accept that. Rashba says, no, nearly third line, Nabol, the Chushu Tali Besiba. Now, what's the reason you wouldn't hire somebody based on age? It's not because there's something wrong with the age, it's called Sheyeshna Lesiba. If the reason is in existence, in Yanigra Karasiba, then you go after the reason. Lesiba says, Zikna Achzorius. If we really feel that anybody who's old is going to be a little bit angry, a little bit less tolerant, so then it doesn't matter whether they were there before, whether they hadn't been hired earlier. It has to do with this age inherently in certain contexts being a disqualification. So here too, Rav Eisner points out that sometimes if you have a type of job where the job description is not dependent upon a person being in touch with the youth per se, or having a youthful perspective, and that we would have a presumption, you have more exorbitant serious when you reach a certain age where it's just a question of getting the job done. A person is a shokei, and he's very, very nimble, and he's very agile, and he's very dexterous, and he's able to get the job done in terms of shepping. So he says a person could be 100 years old, and he's a very good shokei, and he has complete control of his faculties and his limbs and can do a good job. So then there would be no basis, according to halakha, for firing a person based on age alone. Take a look at the Piskei Choshen. It's Rabbi Yeshua Yeshaya Bloy, who wrote a number of very important, I think that's the first name, wrote a number of very important Sfarim on laws of Choshen Mishpat. So he wrote, Paul Shehiskin, I have a worker who got old, and he's not really capable of getting the job done anymore. So he says that if, as a result of his age, he can't do the job as well anymore, you're really allowed to get rid of him. But if you gave him a lifetime contract, when you gave the lifetime contract, you knew, hey, a lifetime includes young age, it includes middle age, and includes old age. That's the definition of a lifetime. But you gave the person a lifetime contract anyway, and you know that when people get old, they're going to slow down, but you gave the person a lifetime contract anyway, after Shana Yachol Asalko. So then it's possible that you really can't get rid of the person. There are tshuvos about a chazan who was hired with a lifetime contract, and his voice got a little bit crickety as he got older. So he says, it's understood you gave a lifetime contract. That just means that you help out the chazan. Maybe you have other people diving certain fields, doesn't dive in quite as much. He has his children help him out and sing together with him. His children, his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren sing together with him. But you gave a lifetime contract. You gave a lifetime contract. Remember Rabbi Kalapa Shlita, who's the rabbi of the youngest on Mushlu Parkway for many, many years. I think the shul has closed down a few years ago because there was just nobody left there. So he said once that his shul gave him a lifetime contract, but unfortunately the shul didn't get a lifetime contract. So, you know, the job has to, you know, still be viable, obviously, for this period of time. But if you're saying to somebody you're going to keep them for a lifetime, that includes even when they're going to slow down in old age. Now, he points that in a footnote. He says, even though mi'ikar adin, you really would be allowed to fire somebody if they weren't able to get the job done as well as they get older. He says, this is according to the strict letter of the law. If you have an old worker who's been faithful to the service of your company and your organization for many, many years, now he's just slowing down a little bit, but he didn't do anything wrong. So you shouldn't, we say, we pray for that from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, we should act that way towards others as well. And if you can find a lesser job or a part-time sort of thing for the person to do, or an easier position, so then you should really try to help them along those lines, and that's a part of what we would say is Lifnim Mishura Sadin. Now, moving on to source 8. Let's skip to source 7 for a second. Source 8, Tzitz Eliezer, Eliezer Yudha Waldenberg, talks about a worker who didn't show up for long periods of time. Just didn't show up to work. One of the most important qualifications for a worker to do his or her job is to show up. You don't show up. So that's the worst possible non-performance of a job that a person can do. So he spoke about a person who worked for a governmental organization, a pakid, but the person didn't show up for long periods of time. So the person said, well, I didn't show up, says the person, because they were sick. They were sick. So Sitzeliezer says, is that a valid time? And said they shouldn't be fired because they were sick. So he says, no! If the person's not showing up, it doesn't matter whether it's their fault or whether it's not their fault. Just like a Rebbe who does a lousy job, just that doesn't teach the Torah properly, you don't have to rehire that person. That's considered to be what the Gemara discusses, a pseudo lahada. That is considered to be negligence. That's not a question of, oh, I'm going to get somebody who's better. This person is just lousy. They're a lousy Rebbe. They're not good at doing their job. A person doesn't show up to work, so of course you can fire the person, says that Tzitz Eliezer. They don't necessarily lose whatever severance rights would have come along with the job if it wasn't their fault, he says. But in terms of just the right of termination, you certainly have the right of termination if the person is not showing up altogether. Take a look in page 3.
Even if he's sick?
Even if he's sick. So take a look at page 3. It says that, yeah, because you need to, you can't just pay a person for not showing up to work. Whether the person, the employee, is at fault or not, they don't have to suffer this tremendous loss in their expenses that they have to pay a full salary to somebody who just doesn't show up. So he says that falls into the category of what we have in source 7. The Shulchan Aruch, based on the Gemara, says whenever I have a loss said that is not going to be able to be made up, where a worker just messes up in a way that it causes permanent loss. And the Shulchan Aruch mentions people in a public type of service, like a gardener, we mentioned before, a butcher, a gardener, a sofer, a malamed. But the Ramah adds, v'yeshomim du'adin liyachid, that this can also be true even if it's not a public job, but even if it's in the private sector as well. Whenever it's upstated lohadr, the person is just causing a terrible loss to the business, so then you don't have to keep them. And it's interesting, because if you look at the Lashon of the Shulchan Aruch in Source 7, so he says that this is true with respect to any kind. He gives examples of a sofer that's constantly messing up the contracts, or you have a malamed who's constantly not teaching the children properly and they're not learning anything. Oh, he says, olam and betos, who's teaching them the wrong things. V'chol kayotzi be'elu. And anything along these lines, so this catch-all phrase, v'chol kayotzi be'elu, says the Tzitz Eliezer, that somebody who doesn't show up at all, then he says, clearly this would be included within this category of l'chem bar, this is the last bold of print, that this also is included in Vakob Kayotze Beilu. Now, you can have certain provisions that you pay a person, that you allow a person to be paid for disability for a certain period of time, but disability can't go on forever. It can't go on forever. Just like if you have a professor, a tenured professor in a college who gets sick, they're not going to draw their full salary forever. They might draw it for a couple of months. There might be a certain disability period, but it just doesn't go on forever. Even if the person has tenure, you have to actually show up and do your job. Okay? Now, yes. A question? Somebody wants to ask a question? Okay. Yes. I'll take questions now. Yes? What? So again, if it's in the public capacity, you don't have to give a warning. But the Ramah says that you do need a chazaka, that the person has to have messed up at least three times, or if you're not waiting for a chazaka, then you have to give a warning at least once. It's a machlokas mechaber and Ramah. The mechaber says that if it's causing damage for a public position, it doesn't require any warning or any chazaka, and the Ramah brings the opinion that you need either a one warning or a chazaka that the person messed up three times even without a warning. So that's a machlokas. It's a machlokas.
So yeah. An ones situation of sickness, it's an ones. Yet he's saying that you can get rid of somebody for being sick.
Yes, you can yes.
If a person's an ovo.
After a certain period of time.
Okay, a person's an ovo.
No, because that's a short no. Because everybody understands that happens to everybody. That happens to everybody. Then you'd have to like fire the whole world. And that's only for a 7-day period. We're talking a person who didn't show up for months and months at a time. Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, in which he says everyone understands that even though you're never supposed to miss work, if a person comes late a few times, or they miss a couple of days of work, and they didn't have a good excuse, it's not grounds for termination, because that's the minhag of Medina, shall we say, that everybody does this to some. They shouldn't do it. They shouldn't have unexcused absences. He says a few unexcused absences is not considered to be grounds for termination.
Can you dock pay for the time you didn't?
Yeah, docking pay is a totally
even
different
for
story. No, I don't know. It depends on the minhag makom. That's very much dependent upon the minhag makom. Now, the post can talk about other types of situations as well. Like, for example, Rav Reisner in his work talks about somebody who's just not getting the job done at all. Not because the person is negligent or the person is deliberately committing malfeasance. They're just not capable of getting the job done at all. You give them a chance, but he says that also is considered to be grounds for termination. The Shevin Alevi talks about if you have somebody who's a kollel fellow who's just not keeping his siddurim, so you can get rid of a kollel fellow along the lines of the Tzitz Eliezer. What if you think that, what if the person is a malamed and he's moonlighting or he's staying up all night and therefore he's falling asleep in his class? That's also given as grounds for termination. The person has to be awake. But Moshe has an interesting tshuva about how a malamed is allowed to even skip parts of the davening in order to get home to eat breakfast so that he could be well fed before he gets his in order to do his job properly. So we do have a sense that a person has to apply themselves to their job. If they're not applying themselves to a job, that could be grounds for termination, but again, everything would have to be proven. What is interesting, we mentioned, I think, earlier, was that what happens if the business starts to go bad and you have to get rid of certain employees? So who goes first, who goes last? So Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva in which he says that it's not like you're a creditor standing first in line because you were hired first for a position. That once people are hired, so the same hischaivus that the employer has towards the person who was hired first, the employer has towards the person who was hired second, and therefore there's no automatic rule. He says, except under limited circumstances, he has, you know, a number of different scenarios, except under limited circumstances, there's no automatic seniority rule. And he says that if you had a job where you had two positions that were functional, and now you're down to really only needing one position, ideally you try to keep both people at 50% pay, and maybe you have a little bit of a pshara to say that the first one gets the 60% and the second one gets 40%, so you could break it down in that particular fashion, but there isn't an automatic presumption that the person who was there last that is the first one out. Some say that if the contractual terms come to an end, and you assume that you don't have to renew terms, so you just if you have to pick one, so you pick whichever one you think is going to be the better worker, but that's obviously a different scenario. That's when it's an onus for the worker, that for the employer, that the employer is not able to sustain everybody. So these are some of the considerations, some of the different types of cases that have come in front of Beis Din in a very, very common course of action of employment termination disputes. And as the poskim all say, the goal is to try to provide gainful employment for all members of the community, to be conscientious workers, but also to be conscientious employers, that you hope that every employment situation will be fruitful and productive and will be positive and lasting. So we'll stop with this, and Mirtz Hashem, next time around, we'll try to start engaging in a Be'iyun study of some of the concepts that are discussed in Hilchos Dayanim that govern the workings, the inner workings of Beis Din. What I'd like to focus upon is a lumdus type of discussion of the concept of Shlichusayo Ka'avdinan, or what does it mean that we are considered to be continuations of the Dayanim of yesteryear, and how does that define our jurisdiction and our understanding of our jurisdiction nowadays?